Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ryan Lehrer on WNYC, and as the U.S. role in Afghanistan winds down and some of the hopes for democratization fade following the Arab Spring, I'm joined by a guest who argues that Western democratic ideals pay insufficient attention to the roles of clans or kinship-based groupings. Mark Weiner is an expert in constitutional law and legal history at the Rutgers School of Law, and he's here with his new book, The Rule of the Clan, What an Ancient Form of Social Organization Reveals About the Future of Individual Freedom. It looks at the social and legal structures in kinship-based societies and what they mean for Western-style individual rights. Welcome to WNYC, Mark Weiner.
Thanks for having me on the show.
First, just to be clear, what do you mean by clans and a word that you use in the book, clanism?
Mm-hmm. Well, the rule of the clan is a form of social and legal organization centered primarily on extended kinship or lineage groups that's existed throughout history and across the world. In anthropological terms, a clan is merely a subset of a tribe, but I use the term clan to encompass a whole range of collective groups from traditional tribal forms to even forms of corporate social organization that exist within the heart of liberal democratic societies. Clanism is the name given by the Arab Human Development Report's 2000 report to a form of collective organization that's especially affecting societies in the Middle East and North Africa today, in which the state has been captured by these collective kinship organizations and in consequence treats its citizens through the framework of the patriarchal family and treats individuals not so much as citizens but more as troublesome dependents to be managed.
So a country with strong clans would be a country where it would be difficult to develop individual rights as we think of them in this country?
That's right. The rule of the clan essentially is a type of legal system that diminishes the power either formally or functionally of individuals. And that's why it's so important for liberal democratic societies to assist those reformers that are seeking to build a state that's dedicated to liberal democratic ideals.
There's at least one irony or paradox there if you're arguing that individual freedom depends on the existence of a healthy, robust central state, and that is that libertarians are always looking to weaken the state in the name of individual freedom.
I think this is a common misperception that people have on both the right and the left. We're often taught to believe that individualism and individual freedom exists most powerfully either when the state is weak or when the state is absent, that the reverse of government is somehow a maximal world of individual choice, often called the market. But in fact, from a historical and comparative perspective, we see that precisely the reverse is true, that only a robust, effective, healthy, transparent, and legitimate state is capable of vindicating the public interest and therefore vindicating the interests of individuals as such rather than as members of collective groups.
And before we write these off as some kind of exotic sets of groups in Libya or Afghanistan or places like that, if we look more close to home, is there an argument to say that we have the equivalent of domestic clans, the NRA, vegans, Fox News watchers, whatever? Do we just call them interest groups or cultural groups?
We wouldn't want to call the vital institutions, all the vital institutions of civil societies, clans, because they have primarily cultural and psychological rather than hard social and legal and political force. But I think if we look to places in our society where the writ of the state doesn't fully run, for instance, in our inner cities, there we see that, for instance, gang behavior is often strikingly similar to some of the feuding structures of ancient clans. So, of course, they're dedicated to unlawful activity. That is, when the state is weak or absent, what we find is not a world of maximal individual choice, but instead a whole host of collective organizations rush to fill the vacuum of power and maintain social and legal order. And those organizations are dedicated to corporate collectivist principles, not to individualism.
Now, of great concern to you in the book is examples where the U.S. and other Western nations failed to take clans into account, and their foreign policy suffered as a result. For example, you mentioned that the first comprehensive study on the Iraqi tribes was conducted 3 years into the war effort. So what impact do you think that a delayed study like that had on the war?
Well, I think that if we as a liberal democratic society, whether we are involved militarily in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever we happen to be involved in throughout the world, if we don't understand the dynamics of clan societies, we will walk blindly in a geopolitical world, and we will harm our interests, and we will harm the interests and the dignity of the people of the societies in which we have a stake.
Do you think they don't know this at the State Department, don't know this at the CIA? It seems so obvious.
Well, certainly an organization like the military is slow to learn, and there are individuals and groups, of course, within the State Department, the Central Intelligence Agency, and elsewhere that take a vital interest in these clan dynamics. But as a society in our common public discourse, in our political discussions, I think we could do a whole lot better.
And in the book, you talk about your close friend, Karen, that's an alias, who 2 years after September 11th was given the job of leading the interrogation team at Guantanamo Bay, interviewing detainees from Saudi Arabia. Tell our listeners about what Karen taught you about different clan cultures.
When Karen became the leader of the team interrogating detainees from Saudi Arabia in Guantanamo, she quickly discovered that as a result of some of the peculiarities of the military tracking system that was used to track detainees as they entered the facility, information about the detainees' clan and tribal affiliation was either obscured or sometimes lost entirely. And so the motivations of many of the detainees for taking up arms against us in the first place was lost as well. And I take that as a metaphor for how we can walk blindly in a geopolitical world if we don't attend sufficiently to the clan affiliations that are so important to the people who exist and live within clan societies.
But when you asked Karen what she thought of the detainees as people, she replied, intensely human.
Oh, yes. And I should say, just for her sake, although I don't say this in the book, that Karen is resolutely against torture, finds it morally abhorrent and against our national interests, as of course am I. The detainees are intensely human, and the rule of the clan and clan affiliations are intensely human as well. We crave the solidarity and the principles of social justice that the rule of the clan offers, often more effectively than liberal societies. And if we don't attend to the essential humanity of clan societies and those who live within them, then our own liberal democratic societies may fall or collapse within their own hollow core.
Do you think that modern democracies, in the sense that we usually think of them, can be built in societies where clans are a prominent feature?
Yeah, absolutely. I have certainly, if we're thinking about the Middle East and North Africa, I'm optimistic in the long term that people dedicated to liberal democratic principles will ultimately be victorious, in part because many of the traditions in which the liberals of the Middle East and North Africa find themselves offer so many intellectual and cultural resources for building democratic societies, including, I should say, the political and spiritual tradition of Islam.
And yet you were saying before that the existence of strong clans works against the developing of individual rights, and you need a strong nation state to trump the clans in order to do that. So what are we rooting for here in these countries? I mean, I think I'm rooting for societies that respect human rights and have decent prosperity, but those things can happen in more clannish or less clannish structures, and I'm not sure I care one way or the other. if, you know, basic individual rights and a reasonable prosperity can flourish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to root for the development of a strong state that's robust and effective, transparent and legitimate, not simply because a strong state is the most effective legal instrument we have for creating and maintaining and protecting individual rights and the values of modern liberal individualism, but also because a strong state can do so in ways that will protect the interests of societies outside of the Middle East and North Africa by maintaining the clan and tribal cork or by putting the clan and tribal cork back into the bottle.
Mark Weiner. His book, just out, is The Rule of the Clan, What an Ancient Form of Social Organization Reveals About the Future of Individual Freedom. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.